Welcome to Chef Journeys. Man, it's beautiful outside, I gotta tell you. Seattle in March isn't always great, but right now, it's freaking amazing. We have just reached 408 all-time downloads, so to all 408 of you, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This podcast is really just a labor of love, and I expect that it'll get bigger someday, but for right now, it is just a few of us checking it out, talking to each other, chefs talking to each other. Amazing. But today I wanted to spend a little time and I wanted to catch up to myself in somewhere around 2006. I had burnt out. I think if you open a textbook and look for burnout, there I'd be, just a big old picture of these cheeks. And so I took a little time and I relaxed a little bit, not very much, not very good at that. And I got an opportunity to go work with a company that sold specialty goods, dry goods, oils and vinegars and spices and all that stuff. And it was one of those things where somebody I knew said, "Hey, you'd be great at this, come talk to me." And I thought, sure, why not? That didn't work. I mean, it just didn't. It didn't fucking work. I am not meant to be a salesperson sitting in a car, driving around from account to account. It's lonely. I'm not great at lonely. I like people. I like to talk. You can only talk to yourself so much before you go, oh my God, this isn't right. So did that. That was okay. Learned a little bit about myself. Learned a little bit about what it looks like to stare in at a chef from the outside. And I think that was a good perspective. And then as I was getting ready to transition out of that sales role, I was taking my replacement around because they found a way to replace me like in days, which didn't surprise me because I wasn't very good. Taking my replacement around, and I've been trying to get to this one chef. I was just trying to like get an appointment with him, and he wouldn't answer my phone calls, or if he did, he wasn't very helpful. And all of a sudden, there he was, outside the back door of his establishment, smoking a cigarette. We rolled up, I introduced myself, and he's like, "Oh yes, I remember you." Important to note, he was a third generation French chef. This guy is bloody amazing. And he's got a thick French accent, and I'm not going to even pretend that I have a good French accent or impression of one. And he says, "I remember you. Well, why are there two of you?" And I said, "Well, this is my replacement, and so I'm the old guy, he's the new guy." And he says, "Well, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going back in the kitchen where I belong, man. Like, that's what I do." He says, "You are a chef?" I said, "I am." He goes, "I need a chef." I said, "You do?" He says, "Come talk to me tomorrow morning, and I'd be happy to." Before you know it, the stars aligned, and I had a job, and I was working for the Jonathan Club in Los Angeles, California. And I was just kind of, you know, checking out a new world, because I'd never been in clubs, but essentially a hotel with banquets and, you know, multiple restaurant venues. And, you know, people pay a lot of money to pay more money. It was crazy. Membership has its privileges, I suppose. I got to do some great food. The cost wasn't really an object, because these folks, they wanted the best. So I had a butcher at my deploy. I had a number of very well-trained cooks, both at lunch and at dinner. And we just tried to do the best food we possibly could. Sometimes, you know, get a call, one member, he says, "I want spaghetti and meatballs tomorrow at 6. Well, thank you for 24 hours notice, I appreciate it. Call down to the butcher, say, "Butcher, let's have some ground veal, some ground pork, and some ground beef," and boom, we got meatballs the way mama intended. Good stuff, you know, like, it was entertaining. It was a look into a world I'd never been in. Never sort of been part of a thing where dining room, so it was great. Did that for just about a year. Had my eyes open to some amazing food and some great people that I still talk to today. My wife and I were feeling like we wanted to experience something else, so we kind of got our shit together and we moved up to the Bay Area. And so we were living in Oakland, California, in this little area, like just right on the edge where it's like you walk two steps to your left and you're in Emeryville, California, and then you walk two steps to your right and you're in Berkeley, California, and then if you stay where you are, you're in Oakland. So it was just this little triangle of silliness, but pretty cool. I was able to find a job working for a place called Town Hall. This was Mitchell and Steven Rosenthal, and these guys had worked with Puck way back in the day at Postrio, and they had teamed with another one of their friends, and they had really they had established an absolute hallmark of downtown. I'd never seen a place that was so consistently busy day in, day out. Monday through Sunday, they were going to do 200 covers for dinner almost without fail. The food was good, and the chef, both chef owners were there on a regular basis, and they're kind of peering over your shoulder. And I took a job as a sous chef because I needed a job, is the honest truth. And that worked for a little while. And then my wife was talking to a friend that she's known for years and years. And she says, you know, one of my friends is looking for a chef, and she works for this big company. And I said, huh, okay. And so, you know, there's a couple of conversations and a couple of phone calls. Next thing I know, I'm driving to Burlingame, California, which is the little town just south of the San Francisco airport. And I'm walking into this restaurant that's right on the water. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. Big, huge kind of place that you, I don't know, I just never something I really thought I'd be looking at, but the ceilings and the beams, those things must have been 35 feet high. And picturesque windows and a good-sized kitchen and a good-sized prep kitchen and a huge walk-in. Oh my God, huge walk-in. It was great. Place was called Kincaid's, and it was in Burlingame, California. Come to find out, it was owned by a company called Restaurants Unlimited. And Restaurants Unlimited had made their name in the 80s and 90s as just being one of those places with great systems, and they developed people. It had really been about lots of big restaurants that had huge menus. Not quite cheesecake big, but they were big. And so for me, it was time to make a decision. Do I stay in a place like Town Hall that has incomparable reputation, or do I turn it up a notch and go for something a little bit different, a little bit bigger? The thought was I go bigger because maybe they'd have some infrastructure and vacations might be a thing. there'd be some infrastructure and maybe it wouldn't be quite the grind in hours. And I think it started out that way, honestly. In fact, I'm pretty sure I heard the words chef go home one too many times, because I had never been in that situation. I'd never been in a place where we had great development from two sous chefs down to lead cooks during the day, lead cooks at night, other people who were chomping at the bit to get to learn to be a lead cook. And so there was lots and lots of levels of support. And so I'd never been around that, but so I'm just thinking I got to be there because that's what chefs do. And so that was fall of 2007. So, you know, I go through about a year, maybe a little more, and all of a sudden, 2009, CEO exit stage left, a new guy comes in, and I could feel something brewing. You know, it was a weird time. Economy's going a little screwy. I think now they call it like the Great Recession of our time. Okay. Here's what I know about that. The numbers started to dwindle a little bit, but we had so much business travel. So much of our business was about the businessmen coming in from the airport, staying in the local hotels, getting a good meal. We all had a whole line of steaks. We did steaks, we did seafood. You could also get a great pasta dish. It was, again, big menu. At this point, I had wrested the control of my fresh sheet. So I had eight slots that I could change out pretty much every 2 weeks. specials. And so sometimes I would rotate things, sometimes I'd keep things on. But as much as I wanted to change it out, every 2 weeks, I could change it out. And I think the way that it had been done for years is, they might change out three here, and then 2 weeks later, three there. And then, you know, if something's not working, then maybe they change out three of the next cycle. Well, I figured out that if I kept changing and I really kept staying as fresh as I could, that the guys would come. And they, you know, they knew that they could get a great meal, and it was something that I was proud of as far as trying to offer something San Francisco-esque, but just a little bit outside San Francisco. So we pushed, and we were able to maintain, you know, year over year numbers that were better than our competitors, better than our neighbors, better than probably the rest of the company, or at least part of it. And here it is. This all of a sudden, what had become my obsession of, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to push, even when they would say, "Chef, go home." All of a sudden now, the new CEO that's coming in, he's cranking up the heat on labor. He's cranking up the heat on food cost. He's looking for people to find ways to get more sales in the door. And thank goodness I was accustomed to pushing hard, because they were starting to push us pretty hard, but I was already sort of doing that, so it didn't really matter. And so just kept going. You know, other restaurants in the area had to let people go, and I pulled my team together and said, "Hey guys, well, just trust me. Listen to what I have to say. If I need to cut your hours, I'm going to cut them here a little bit, there a little bit, but we're not going to cut anybody out. We're all going to work, and we're going to work together. And if we do that, you'll all make money. You'll all make really close to what you've been making in hours. But we're going to need to push hard." And so they thankfully they looked at me and said, "Yes, chef, we got it. We're with you." And so we kept going through 2009, 2010. And so somewhere in the last quarter of 2010, I looked at my wife and I said, "You know, we're busting our ass and our ends are not meeting. This is not like being in the Bay Area at this point in history is just not great. It's very challenging to pay all of our bills and get everything done and do all the things and have a life. Let's move somewhere else." So we started looking at cities, and over time, you know, it became clear that we could probably go to Seattle and do okay. And so I came up with a plan. I was going to give my guys a couple, you know, we probably had 3 months left on our lease. Maybe it was two, I don't know. And went to my boss at my regional and said, "Hey, I'm going to move to Seattle because I need to be able to, you know, survive." And they laughed and they said, "That's where our home base is." My regional said, "Give me a week, I'll find you something." And so 7 days later, bada boom, bada bing, he says, "Okay, you're going to Seattle. It's going to take about 4 months to get you there." I said, "Nope, I got to go in two." And so we haggled, we negotiated, we bartered, I don't know, whatever you do. But they made it happen. Company packed all our stuff up, moved us to Seattle. And I got to work in a place called Cutter's Bay House. And this is right next to the Pike Place Market. Everybody has seen it on TV. It's throwing fish over there, and a big, vibrant, bustling live market. It was pretty cool. This restaurant, Cutter's, is just on the, I guess, north end of that. And this is one of those places in the world that had been great. I mean, it opened in the 80s. And if you listen to the stories, like, it was a prototype for a lot of the restaurant, a lot of the big seafood, you know, sort of waterside restaurants of Seattle, mainstay institutions that have gone on to be massive, got a lot of their inspiration from this restaurant way back in the day. RUI was a real force up there, up here in Seattle. And so, honestly, this restaurant had seen better days. And so the plan was we would work that season out, go through the summer. And mind you, this is 2011. We'd go through the summer, get into early 2012. They had shut it down. They were going to do all sorts of renovations. Oh, CEO got changed, and now the renovations are changing. Plans are different, and it's not what it was. But there I am. And so all of a sudden they came, the new CEO came and he said, you know, the name Cutters doesn't seem to be tarnished. It just needs a little freshen up. So we went from Cutters Bay House to Cutters Crab House. And I got the opportunity to write the menu. I was given some parameters, and as long as I stayed within those parameters, the food was mine. Write the recipes, do it, and make sure that it was executable. And so we did some great food that really brought kind of my vision of what market food should be. Something, you know, lots and lots of fresh, lots of more produce, I think, than that style of menu had seen. Maybe it was the California in me, you know, but whatever. So we did that. And then quite honestly, after being open for, I don't know, 8 or 9 months, after that remodel, I think that my vision of the world and their vision of the world were not the same. And an amazing thing had happened, in, you know, say, call it 6 years. I'd really pushed myself to some of my own limits. And I think that reopening that restaurant really pushed me perhaps some days beyond my limits. But I found myself in a similar place to 2006 where, God, I was burnt, man. I was just crispy. And I did not want to be in that restaurant anymore. I didn't believe in it after a little while. And so it was time for me to go. And I, you know, gave my notice and was respectful and made sure that there was transition plans and stepped away. And, you know, I found myself a chef job working for a little tiny restaurant that was like, I don't know, 80 seats. And they were happy to have a chef and I was happy to have a job. And it wasn't really meant to be that restaurant. They were underfunded and eventually they shut down a year or two later, but I probably made it about, I don't know, 9 months, 10 months. And then, you know, set about looking for what was next. And then I got a phone call from one of the guys who I'd worked for in Restaurants Unlimited, and he'd moved on. And he says, you know, I know you just got a job, because I'd grabbed something, but it wasn't right. He's like, I know you just took a job, but I got something that would make sense for you, so come talk to me. Well, I'd always respected this guy. He'd been my regional chef for a while in Restaurants Unlimited. And I thought, well, he was always good to me. Why would I not? So I went and I talked to him. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting across the street from the only water that is in Seattle, which is the Puget Sound, across from the only beach that's around. And I'm in a big glass house of a restaurant that looks at the water on two walls. And I thought, man, this is beautiful. I could get into this. It was called Cactus, and it was flavors of the Southwest, and it was very Mexican based. So there's some Southwestern food on there, and there's some Tex-Mex on there, and there's some, you know, some great tacos, just great, well prepared food. And you get going, kind of looking around at it, and it feels like almost feels like a corporate restaurant in that they'd done their job with systems and they'd really made it, you know, hum. And so you get there in the summer and open at 11 o'clock and you're busy from 11 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night. And it would just go, 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 because people were out on the beach. And that was exciting. And, you know, a team of cooks and dishwashers and prep cooks. And these folks were awesome. And they'd been working hard and they've been pushed for years and they kind of just knew how to do that. As time went on, come to find out that, you know, Cactus, they had multiple locations and they'd had a reputation for pushing pretty hard and pushing their people. So sometimes it was challenging to recruit and staff because people were like, no, I don't want to work that hard. But we did some pretty good stuff. About a year and a half in, maybe a little less, maybe, I don't know, call it 14 months. I get a phone call from my boss and he says, hey man, you ready for the next thing? And I said, throw it at me. He says, I'd like to promote you and I'd like to move you up to a multi-unit role. You'll oversee three restaurants. There's another guy, he's going to oversee the other three restaurants, because at that point we were six. At that point there was five Cactus and one thing called Tavern Hall. And this had just opened at that point. and it was, if it was all sit down, it was 500 seats. It was about 10,000 square feet. So it was a big joint, probably 40 televisions. For the Seahawks, they would fill up and it would be massive. It was amazing. And, you know, it was an opportunity to do something I'd never done, which is run multiple restaurants, because gosh, why not? And so that was exciting. And so, you know, kind of rolled through that. You know, one day I said, so as a chef, I knew what to do. And, you know, okay, now I'm the multi-unit chef. What does that mean? And my boss says, go add value, Simon. Oh, okay. Sure. Great. And so I kind of learned what that meant. It was about teaching and training and developing the chef, making him or her better at what they did. It was about engaging the sous chefs so they understood not only their role, but get them ready to be chefs, because gosh, we're going to grow. There's more cactus coming. You know, long live the succulent. And so we just kept going, you know, developing, you know, kind of over the years. And come 2019, we opened another location in Tacoma, which is about 30 miles to the south. And so now my region was a little wider and I was driving a little bit more. And, okay, cool. Got an opportunity to do a fresh opening with a really established company. And it was like no other opening I'd ever had, because it didn't kill me. I tried. But it didn't kill me. And so we got that restaurant going. Thankfully, I took the chef who had been my sous chef at that very first Cactus, which was the Alki location. And he had been promoted to the chef. And then when it was time to open a new restaurant, there was nobody that was more tuned into the culture of Cactus than this guy. So it felt like the right move. He tended to live to the south. And so it was a great commute for him. And he really enjoyed it all. And it worked real well. And so we did that. And then the thing that we all know about, COVID hit us March of 2020, and boom, I was out of work for 6 weeks. We shut all the restaurants down on the day that they told us to shut them down, and we were able to open up two of them 2 days later and one more the next day. And we stayed like that for a few weeks, probably 3-4 weeks, and then we opened up one more. But we had two restaurants, our two biggest restaurants, that Tavern Hall and then one in the Bellevue Mall in Bellevue, Washington. And those big, bad restaurants, they stayed closed the longest because nobody was going to the mall. Just nobody. It was not a good thing. But eventually we got all five of the other restaurants open and functioning, and, you know, and thankfully, our owners had seen the trends that were coming in 2017, 18, 19, where the off-premise, the to-goes, the deliveries, you know, having multiple delivery services and really tuning those systems for those 3 years. All of a sudden, here we are, and it's really not that much of a switch to only do to-go out of our kitchens. And so, thankfully, we made the transition to being those ghost kitchens very quickly, and we've kind of weathered it. And all of a sudden we got to open up a little bit and then a little bit more. Oh, now we're closed down again. That was the end of 2020, and we had another layoff. If I'd only known what was coming, I think I would have ate my Wheaties and strapped on my roller skates, because as we rolled into 2021, you know, we're opening the dining room. Now we're at 25%. Oh, now we're at 50%. There might have been a 75% in there somewhere. I'm not 100% certain. And then we opened it up and we were allowed to be ourselves again. And the craziest thing happened. Those to-go orders, those delivery orders, they didn't drop by much. In some restaurants, they only dropped by 10%. Others, they dropped by less than that. Maybe one dropped by 25%. But the people came back in force. People were excited to get out to Cactus. They wanted their margaritas. They wanted their tacos. Because God bless it, who doesn't, right? And so we were tasked with replacing a number of sous chefs. So each one of our seven restaurants had one chef and two sous chefs. And so here we go. You know, it's like, all right. I walked back into work on the first day of being back from my second layoff, And my boss hands me a stack of resumes. I said, what's this? He says, we have 5 positions to fill. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. He says, nope, we lost a couple to Amazon. One guy vanished. Another we promoted. So we have 5. By the time we got to September, that was January, late January of 2021. By the time we got to September, we had replaced or promoted 9, count them, 9 chefs. And we were able to recruit and hire and train. We trained everybody at least 3 weeks, sometimes 4 to 5, depending on how everything was going. And we got them all trained. We got them all in place. And then it hit me. My boss sat me down one day and he says, hey, man. I said, what's up? He says, I'm leaving. I'm going to another company. And I thought, oh, boy. And I said, okay. And so, you know, those are moments, right? Like you gotta make some decisions. And so I made the decision to stick in. And that's all I'm going to tell you for today. But here's what you got to know. From 2006 all the way up, I guess I did a lot there. That was 16 years. During that time, I really understood that people were the commodity. People were the thing that you had to really take care of. Solving for personalities, taking care of people, developing people. That was the true heart of the job that I'd taken as chef. Food is always important, and it's always gonna be there. But boy, without the people, you don't get shit. So I guess this is where I say, this is another episode of Chef Journeys. I'm so happy you're playing with us. Happy you're able to join us, because I have a lot of fun doing this. Tune in next time when you'll hear Simon say, what the fuck? At least once, guaranteed. Until then, I'll bring you another episode when I can. Thanks, guys.